We have two cases on the calendar this morning, both patent cases from district courts. And the first one is Continental Circuits v. Intel et al., 18-2018-1076 and 1103. Mr. Lampkin.
Thank you, and may it please the court. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. The invention here addresses a problem of delamination through a unique surface structure. Teeth or fangs that dig into the next layer that prevent them from pulling apart unless you break the teeth. The claims and the specification detail that structure greatly. For example, claim 100 and claim 122 of the 580 patent specify the depth in terms of mils. They specify the up angle required, and dependent claim 122 describes the density of the teeth required.
But this appeal is generally about desmearing, right? Double or single?
No, the appeal is actually about teeth, and we think the patent's about teeth. And the question is whether you would read into the claim a requirement that you perform desmears, and in particular read into them a requirement of a double desmear. Then I think
I counted at least four places in the specification where it talked about double desmearing in comparison, in contradistinction to the prior art's single desmearing. So why was it wrong for the district court to interpret the claim to mean double desmearing?
I think there's no doubt that the specification in explaining ways, one technique for making those teeth, refers to specific compositions, things like Shipley Crimson materials and the Zibagagi product Probolec XB7081. And it says with those particular materials, there's no doubt, it says, you're not going to achieve the teeth. They won't come about unless you use them in an off-label kind of way. They're usually meant for a single pass desmear. Unless you do a double pass desmear, you don't take advantage of the non-homogeneities in order to produce these teeth, the cavities of unusual shape that'll hold them hold together. And I think that's actually clear from each of the specific mentions. And there's only one that I think is even close to ambiguous. But I should walk through that.
That's the one at the bottom of column 8, top of column 9.
Yes, actually, that is the one that I think is potentially ambiguous. And I could start there if you would like, Judge Toronto. But I think that one, to read that one, you have to look at it in the context of the two sentences that precede the one that's being relied on. Because it starts out and says, the following process substeps, and this is column 8, around line 42. The substeps of the above-mentioned step 6 describe a generic sequence for a desmear process to form cavities. So we're describing a desmear process to form cavities, not the claimed or the only way to do that. And the other thing is it mentions, and this turns out to be important, it says, of the above-mentioned step 6. And that seems innocuous when you look at it first, but that's a cross-reference all the way back to column 5. Because column 5, around line 37, says step 6, as subsequently discussed in greater detail. So column 8 is the greater detail that's being promised in column 5. It involves the etching of cavities, veins, etc., to accommodate the teeth. And then it continues. One technique for forming the teeth is somewhat similar to what has been known as the swell and etch or desmear process, except that contrary to all known teachings of prior art, in effect, a double desmear is utilized. So that's merely one technique. There's no doubt that each of these statements is describing a technique, one way to bring out the claimed teeth. The question is, do they go further? Do they actually come out and say the only way, read into the entire invention, a particular way of achieving them, and that particular way is the double desmear?
Mr. Lampkin, if we agree with you, do you have an enablement problem?
No, Your Honor, I think it's entirely enabled because to enable, you only need to enable one mode, and that's clear. And the particular mode that is so evidently enabled here, that there's actually gratuitous and frankly devastatingly strong detail, is that double desmear. You don't have to enable everyone. The guy who invented the structure we call Velcro probably only disclosed one mode of making it. And I'm sure that people really improved upon that. They made it cheaper and better. And those may even separately patentable.
If your claims are not limited to a double desmear process, then you have to enable the full scope of the claims
So I think if we were going to deal with, I think it is actually enabled, each of them is enabled, because we actually do say right in the summary of invention other ways as the best modes, but that's for another day. Enablement is not the way one reads the invention. The invention is based on the specification and, more importantly, the claims, which nowhere have a double D smear process.
Can I just ask just one question following up on the enablement point? I realize we don't have the enablement issue here, but conceivably, at least conceivably, there might be a difference between the product claims and the process claims for enablement, because the product claims, as long as you teach one way to make it, you've made the whole thing. At least a scope of enablement question arises about a process.
I think that may be a fair issue for any issue on remand for enablement. But what we have now is just a simple claim construction question, which really should be based on what do the claims say and what does the specification tell you about the meaning of the claims. And there's just no word anywhere in the claims that says surface means double desmeared surface. There's nothing that says that. And continuing on with column 8, I think, which is kind of the most important piece, it goes on in the second sentence says, although Probilec XB7081, that's that Sibagagi product that's non-homogeneous, apparently was intended for use in the common desmear swell and etch process as used in conventional plated through hole plating lines. So we're talking there saying this is the on-label use. The ordinary use of this particular thing, Probilec XB7081, is to go through and do a single desmear. And it says, but Probilec XB7081 can alternatively be used in carrying out the present invention. So it's one way. It's one surface, one epoxy, one resin that'll actually work. And then we get to the next sentence, and this is where the ambiguity comes in, because at this point, we're only talking about the one technique that we began discussing back in column 5. It says, for example, the present invention differs from the common desmear process in that sub-steps in the desmear process are repeated as a way of forming the teeth. Now, it says repeat sub-steps, not repeat every one of the steps in a desmear. And it says it's a way of forming the teeth, not the only way, not the claimed way, not the exclusive way, not the invention. And I think read properly in its context, this sentence doesn't come close to saying it's clear we intend to make this particular way of doing it a limitation on the invention as a whole. It's merely saying if you're dealing with Probilec, if you're dealing with this particular way of doing it, we're going to need to do a second, we can't go on label. We have to go off label, we got to do it differently, and we're going to have to do two passes. Because if you don't do the second pass, you're not going to get the teeth, and you're not going to get the adhesion. You also won't infringe on the patent because you're not going to have the surface structure that's claimed, but you don't get the invention if you don't do it that way with Probilec. And I think that's actually particularly clear if you go all the way back to the summary of invention. And the summary of the invention is the thing that describes the invention as a whole. It's the most likely thing to describe it. Not a single embodiment, not a single way of making it, but the invention as a whole. And the summary of the invention doesn't say double desmear at all. It says actually the opposite. It goes through for 5 paragraphs. It describes the teeth in detail. It talks about their depth, their angle, the density, how deep they should go without causing any damage to the lower layer. And then the next thing it says, it's theorized that the best mode of achieving this is to use non-homogeneous materials. So we're talking focusing it on the structure of things like Probilec, your resin. And that's actually consistent back with column 5, where it says, and this is around line 50, non-homogeneous materials and or processes seem to be determinative. Non-homogeneous materials seem to be determinative. At no point in the spec is it going to say that a double desmear seems to be determinative. Backing up to summary invention, it says, non-homogeneous materials are used because you can take advantage of that non-homogeneity and cause an uneven etching by either doing a slow and or repeated etch. A slowed etch is not a double desmear. The etch itself is only one step of the desmear. And a repeated etch isn't a double desmear either. The etch is admittedly one of the 6 steps in the desmear process. So it can't be possible to read that summary of invention as saying, hey, the best way to achieve it is a double desmear. Slowed etch, not a double desmear. It's slowing down one step in a potential desmear. Repeated etch, not a double desmear. It's repeating one step in the process of a desmear. And if you kind of tried to read the etch as a desmear, you'd end up with a circularity problem, because later on it says the desmear has 6 steps, one of them etching.
Can I change the subject before your opening time runs out?
Yes, okay, thank you.
And just ask you something about, sort of confirm something for me with the pr- prosecution history, which conceivably might not be enough to meet the really quite high standard of disallow that we probably have operating in this case, because there's no ambiguity of any term in any claim that's being resolved. It's just override the claim terms. Mm-hmm. Do I understand right that Intel's argument about the prosecution history relied only on paragraph 7 of Dr. Wang, not on what the inventor, so the Continental, said in making its argument about paragraph 7? I looked in the two Markman briefs and in the red brief, and I don't see them relying on anything except paragraph 7 all by itself, which the district court also mentioned and didn't mention anything about your argument based on that.
Judge Toronto, that's consistent with my understanding, but I'm not absolutely positive about that answer, and so I don't want to say with clarity. But I think it's very clear, though, that when Dr. Wang said that it is a technique, he wasn't saying that it's the only technique. It's the same exact language of one way for doing it. And at risk of dipping into my rebuttal, it's important because the reason there was a rejection was the examiner, this is on page 2123, said that it's unclear as to how epoxy uses non-homogeneity with the solid content. That's the little picture on page 12 of our brief that explains that. And Dr. Wan responds and says, look, a technique for doing it is to do two passes. And the reason that works is that one pass takes out some of those chunks, and the second pass makes it goes deeper. And he says, it expands opening created by the first pass, quote, making the structure shown in figure 1 and recited in the claims. It's the structure in figure 1 that's the invention. It's the structure that's in the recited claims. And it's the structure that we are pursuing in this suit. We accordingly ask for the judgment of the district court to be reversed. Thank you.
Hold your time, Mr. Lampton. Is it Mr. Mueller or Mueller?
Mueller, Your Honor.
Mueller, all
right. Yeah, please, court, may I proceed? Your Honor, I'm with my colleague Kevin Goldman today. I'm here on behalf of Intel and the Ibiden defendants. I'd like to start where Judge Lurie began this argument. This is about whether the patent claims cover a single dissmear process and products created using a single dissmear process or not. That's the issue. And although the plaintiff is asserting plain meaning, that's really a label used to refer to coverage of single pass dissmear and products created
using... That's not right. I mean, the doctrinal point is that when the words of the claim are not even asserted to be ambiguous in the respect at issue, a specially high standard has to be met to find in the spec something that overrides that plain meaning. It's a part of a doctrinal point. Let's call it clear disavowal, sometimes manifest disavowal, maybe not express disavowal, but it has to be clear. And that's what you have to find in the spec or the prosecution history.
That's right, Your Honor, and it couldn't be clearer here. And because it couldn't be clearer, the patents don't cover single pass dissmear. The judge in this case recognized exactly what you said, that there's an exacting standard that needs to be met before claims can be limited in the fashion that we argued they should be limited. And he found that exacting standard to be satisfied in this case based on multiple statements.
Yeah,
and these.
What about the statement in column 2, lines 25 to 30, that talks about, it's theorized that the best method is to use non-homogeneous materials and techniques, etc. That talks about using those kinds of materials with a slow and or repeated etching, not desmearing, will form these teeth instead of a uniform etch. I mean, that seems to me a pretty clear statement that's directly contrary to what you're arguing.
Your Honor, it's not, and here's why. The first is the use of the word slowed in that sentence mm-hmm. is the one and only use of the word slowed in the entire patent specification. And further statements in the patent specification teach us precisely what these claims cover and do not cover. And in particular, on the question of slowing, in column 5, line 40 through 47, the patent states in the final sentence, that is not merely increasing the times and temperatures and other parameters for the dissmear process, but instead completing the process a second time. So we have a teaching away from adjusting the time and slowing it down, and there's not a sentence in this entire specification in which there's a teaching of how to slow down any aspect of a dismir process as compared to the prior art.
But column 5 is talking about a particular embodiment, whereas column 2 is making a broader statement about the invention as a whole.
Your Honor, we believe that that statement in column 2 refers to repeated etching in the second portion of that sentence. And the first part, referring to the word slowed, again, is the only stray reference to the word slowed in the entire specification.
It's not stray. It's there. It's there, and it's in the summary of the invention.
It is stray, Your Honor, in the sense that there's no teaching anywhere in the specification as to slow it down as compared to the prior art. And I would note, for example, in column 7, lines 3 through 7, patent states, accordingly, the peel strength produced in accordance with the present invention is greater than the peel strength produced by the dismir process of the prior art, i.e., a single-pass dismir process, i.e., it doesn't say a fast dismir process. It doesn't say a dismir process that occurs less slowly than the one that we're claiming. It says a single-pass dismir process and draws a distinction to the present invention, not just an embodiment, the present invention. And if that weren't clear enough, in column 8, lines 49 to 52, patent states in describing the use of the Probilec and how it can be used in the present invention. For example, the present invention differs from the common dismir process in that substeps in the dismir process are repeated as a way of forming the teeth. And then in column 9, lines 1 through 5.
Can I just go back to column 7? To say that the present invention creates a greater peel strength than a single desmear process of the prior art is not to limit the present invention to more than one desmear. It just says what we are doing, whatever that may be, is better than that.
But, Your Honor, what I would say is this. The last part of that sentence is critical. It defines the prior art as a single-pass dismir process. It uses the word i.e. It says i.e. a single-pass dismir process.
That's true as a description of the prior art. But
that's right.
But its complement is not limited to a double dismir process.
Well, Your Honor, if there's any ambiguity on that, in column 9, lines 1 through 5, the patent states, in stark contrast with the etch-and-swell process of the known prior art, however, a second pass through the process, substeps A through F, is used.
I'm sorry, can you just locate me again?
Sure.
Sorry.
Column 9, line 1 through
okay.
5.
Thanks, sir.
In stark contrast with the etch-and-swell process of the known prior art, however, a second pass through the process, substeps A through F, is used. The second pass seems
right,
to make...
Mr. Lampkin's point is that all of that discussion, in fact, refers back to the original, what's column 5 or something, discussion of an embodiment and about let's take some old material and we'll do something using that old material that's different. And so it's a continuation of that description of embodiment, not something more general.
Let's say a couple of things, Renner. First of all, the term that's used is not in an embodiment, it's the present invention. Second, that section of the patent is the detailed description of the drawings, not a preferred embodiment section. The drawings are being used to illustrate the present invention. Third, there is no embodiment in this patent, none, in which there's a description of slowing down any aspect of this process to arrive at the claim structures.
But haven't we said in the particular context of where a clear disavowal is needed in Thorner that the fact that the specification describes just one preferred embodiment is not itself enough to meet that standard?
It's not alone, Your Honor. If there were just a description of the double dismir but no distinction drawn with the prior art, if there were no criticism of the prior art, this would be a different case. That's not what we have here. We have not only a single embodiment, but a single embodiment which is given the label, the present invention, and not only the present invention, there's a distinction drawn between that present invention and the prior art. And it says, in stark contrast with the etch-and-swell process of the known prior art, a second pass is used.
Of course, we have to look at the claims, too. We have to look at the claims first, of course. And a lot of these claims are device claims, not method claims, where the issue is more prominent as to whether it's single or double.
3 points on that, Your Honor. The first is the invention as described in this patent throughout is based on the intertwinement of process and the products created by that process. The very first sentence after the description of which continuation application this particular patent came from states, and I'm at column 1, line 13 through 15, very first sentence, the present invention is directed to methods for making or manufacturing an electrical device and the process, composition, and products thereof. Thereof, that is to say, using these methods. That's the first point. Second is there's language in all of the claims that refer in some form or fashion to process. Now, it's true that some of the process steps that are referred to in the product claims refer to conductive layer versus dielectric layer, but all of them refer in some form or fashion to processes which are used to create these products.
So your contention is that the structure claims are product by process claims?
That's right, Your Honor, and I think that's clear from the specification. It's clear from claim language, and there's more to it than that, Your Honor. For further confirmation that these are, in fact, product-by-process claims, we can look to the declaration that was submitted by the applicants. Judge Toronto, to your question, we are not just relying on the declaration in paragraph 7, but the applicants' arguments about that declaration.
So I looked at least at your two Markman briefs. I didn't see any citation of the applicants' arguments, and I'm not sure I saw any on your pages 22 to 24 or whatever those pages are.
We did brief it below, Your Honor, and in our brief to Your Honors, it said pages 38 and 39, and the portions of the joint appendix that include the applicant statements begin at page 2069, the remarks accompanying a claim amendment. And in that, at page 2069, the applicant stated...
I'm sorry. Show me, can you point to me where in your two Markman briefs below you relied on anything about except paragraph 7 of the Wong Declaration, which wasn't even submitted for purposes of indefiniteness. It says, I'm only addressing written description, though it was then used by Continental for an indefiniteness point.
Well, Your Honor, I don't have a cite to the Markman briefs below right now. We did, in fact, submit the Wong Declaration and the remarks accompanying it to the district court.
Right. That's not my point. My point is I don't think, and I'm looking at page 7 of your opening brief and page 9, which just refers back
sure.
to page 7. Page 7 on the prosecution history paragraph does nothing but quote, I guess, a piece of Wong Declaration 7. It doesn't rely on anything about what Continental said about that at the pages that you recited.
Your Honor, I believe we did fairly point to that. And it's part of the joint appendix at page 2069. I'm going to quote, paragraph 7, this is the applicant's statement to the examiner. Paragraph 7 explains how this would allow the etching process to result in the desired cavity structure. As such, the language of claims 1, 2, 14, 16, and 18 is definite. So the applicant said in relying on paragraph 7. Now, paragraph 7 of that Wong Declaration refers to performing two separate swell and etch steps. There's a couple things I would say. First, each and every claim before the Patent Office at that time was a product claim. Every one. They were article of manufacture claims. The Wong Declaration was referring to this double etching process as a way of explaining why product claims were definite. That was the argument made to the examiner by the applicants using the declaration for support. That's the first point. The second point is three of the claims that were in the application at that time explicitly referred to first and second etching. Those were not the claims that the Wong Declaration, paragraph 7, were directed to. Those were not the claims that the applicants were submitting that declaration in support of.
Right, only 1, 2, 12, 14, and 16 were the subject, and that's because the examiner said you have this weird phrase here about use of non-homogeneity in etching, and I don't know what that means. And Wong came back and said, oh, let me explain it to you. We can dig a little bit out, and then we can dig a little bit more out, but it's only... It's not presented as limiting the definition, just as teaching the examiner what non-homogeneity has to do with getting the ultimate tooth structure.
Well, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I think that he was explaining why this has definite meaning by specific reference to double etching. And he was doing so with respect to claims that did not recite double etching. There were other claims that recited double etching. So the expert declaration submitted by Continental Circuits at that time is entirely consistent with the district court's rationale in this case. The district court found that the products needed to be created using a particular process based on unequivocal statements in the specification. They had an expert who submitted a declaration during prosecution. He said exactly the same thing. with respect to product claims that did not recite double etching. Yet, he said even those product claims require a process that involves double etching. So the expert declaration basically...
Well, except, no, he didn't say that. He didn't say they require it. He said, you, the examiner, have said, I don't understand what this non-homogeneity has to do with what's going on here. And he says, take a look at what we have described here. Now you'll understand why the non-homogeneity gets, you know, chunks of big pebbles out.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. And this is at page 2074 of the Joint Appendix. I'm going to quote. This is from the Wong Declaration, paragraph 7. Last sentence, quote, by forming the irregular recesses in the first etch pass, an opening within the dielectric material would be then enlarged in the second etch pass, making the structure shown in figure 1 and recited in the claims of the McDermott application. He was saying that what was claimed in the McDermott application, those product claims, were products that were formed using this process. There's not a hint in that declaration of any other way of doing it, and he's explicitly referring to the claim language in the application as it stood at that time. All product claims and the claims that recited double etching were not the ones he was referring to. So that expert declaration, it fits hand in glove with what the district court in this case concluded after reviewing the specification, after finding multiple instances where a stark contrast, contrary to all known teachings, this is the language of the specification that was distinguishing between the known prior art, which was defined unequivocally as a single pass to smear, not a fast to smear, a single pass to smear. The specification said merely increasing the time or temperature is not enough. It said going through the steps and then doing it again is what they described as the present invention. When you choose words like that in a specification, stark contrast, contrary to all known teachings, defining the prior art as a single pass to smear, that has meaning. It puts the public on notice as to the meets and bounds of the patent application. And you can't use claim drafting years later to recapture a single pass to smear.
Years later, I thought it was undisputed, and I think I looked at this, that the original application dating way back to 1997 had some claims that specifically claimed double D smear and others that didn't. So the distinction is hardly a kind of late arising afterthought.
There were some claims in the original application that did fit with some of the claim differentiation arguments made by the patentee in this case. What I meant is all of the patents in this case date from 2004 and beyond when the original application was in 1997. All the asserted claims in this case were 7 years or later after the original application. But the bottom line is, for two separate grounds, disavow and present invention, when you use language this strong, contrary to all known teachings, in contrast to the prior art, when you define the prior art as a single pass to smear and make that distinction, that has meaning. It may be the unusual case in which claims are restricted in this fashion, but that's exactly what the district court said. There's an exacting standard to be met to restrict claims in this fashion, and it is met here, given those statements over and over again, which define the present invention in distinction to a single pass to smear, and call that a stark contrast contrary to all known teachings. When you use language like that, you can't claim your claims, recapture that same single pass to smear described as the known prior art.
Thank you, counsel. As you may notice, your red light is on.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Lampkin has some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's nothing in the claims, or the language of the claims, that suggests a double D-smear process. And the dependent claims refute it because they would be completely superfluous if you read a double D-smear process into it. So Intel, in this case, has an extraordinarily heavy burden of showing that there is an express, a clear intent to limit the claims, limit the entire invention.
Express is probably not.
Yes, I think clear intent is the language, and I should correct myself on it. A clear intent based on manifest words of exclusion to limit the whole invention, not particular embodiments, to a double D-smear process. And I don't think it's met here because every one of those descriptions is a description of a technique that begins on column 5. And in fact, it actually begins earlier than column 5. That we'll...
Can you focus again on Wong paragraph 7? Yeah. Wong didn't submit that, at least according to his own words, to address indefiniteness. But you all used it to address indefiniteness. And I don't think Intel actually relied on what you said about it, but you used it for indefiniteness. So why doesn't, why don't we not read that paragraph to say, you want to know what this means, here's what it means double D smear.
And I think the reason that indefiniteness came up...
Giving him your example wouldn't say, here are the boundaries, which is what you want to do when you respond to an indefiniteness rejection.
Yeah, I think the difficulty is, although the examiner used the word indefiniteness, the actual words he used explain that he didn't really know how anything took advantage of the non-homogeneity in order to prove the cavities. Because the quote is, it's not clear as to what is meant by dielectric material being delivered with solid content. Another issue. And it is also unclear as to how epoxy uses non-homogeneity with the solid content. Right. I don't understand how that works. And
right.
our response
and then,
was...
And then the next sentence says, I don't know how it can create cavities. But there's no can after the first how. The first one is how it does. And Wong says, let me tell you how it does. I mean, he doesn't quite say it, but that's...
Yeah. He's, I think he's careful by saying it's a technique. And in that technique, as you described, it scrapes out once and it scrapes it deeper and you get the cavities that are claimed. But it doesn't say this is the limitation to it. And if given that we have a burden, that it has to be very clear. It has to be clear intent to limit the invention to a particular set of limitations that are found nowhere in any of the claims, that are defied by the claims, that are defied by the summary of invention, but are defied by the fact that in the specification it really says one technique for producing these, not the technique or the claim technique. When you have that kind of language throughout the specification and the claims, it's an extraordinarily heavy burden. And I don't think it's met based on the fact that the examiner used a, you know, an indefinite rejection and we responded saying it's not indefinite. But the real guts of what was going on is the examiner didn't know how it worked. And we had Dr. Wan explain to him exactly how it worked, which was simply meaning you take advantage of what's determinative, non-homogeneity, to produce this different structure that was unknown in the prior art. We ask that the district court's judgment be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under review.
Thank you.